Wherever you're listening, if you're in Australia, you're on Aboriginal land. At the National Film and Sound Archive of Australia, we pay respects to the elders and acknowledge their ongoing custodianship of the country where we made this podcast and of the country you're listening to it on. For decades, one of radio's defining features was its impermanence. You listened to it and then it was gone. That was part of what kept you tuning in, of course. You didn't want to miss that next magic moment. But it could also be really frustrating. Back in the 70s and 80s, the solution was a clunky old cassette recorder.
Like a lot of people I know my age used to get a cassette, a blank cassette, and tape the songs I wanted off the radio.
Not anymore. Digital technology has taken us into an era of instant gratification. You can access any audio you want from anywhere around the world, anytime you want it, using the same device you use to book an Uber or order a meal. Amongst all its other uses, the mobile phone has also become the world's biggest audio library.
I used to do this radio show on Radio National for a few years, and you'd be working through the week, and then you'd put it to air, and it would go to air half an hour or whatever it was, and then it would just be gone. And then it might go up online as sort of something that someone could go back on later and stream, but you had to have your computer with you. You couldn't kind of take it with you.
The digital revolution has radically reshaped our audio culture. The days of ringing up a DJ to request our favourite songs are gone. Instead, we log on to a streaming site and let an algorithm choose our soundtrack for us. So, if video didn't kill the radio star, could the algorithm? Well, it's complicated. You've tuned into Who Listens to the Radio, brought to you by the National Film and Sound Archive. I'm Patrick McIntyre, and this is Episode 6, What's New is Old Again. So, it's time to get digital. Digital technologies have transformed the way media is produced, distributed, and consumed. And that's particularly the case with radio. In the 21st century, you can still listen to the radio over the good old AM and FM bands, but you can also stream radio over the internet. And if you have the right gear in your car or at home, you can listen using digital audio broadcasting, also known as DAB, where digital signals are sent over the airwaves on the VHF band. And you can even hear your favourite radio stars using radio's great frenemy, the podcast. Podcasting, as we know it, kicked off in the early 2000s, and its popularity was fueled by the advent of portable MP3 players like the iPod, which was sort of like the great-granddaughter of the transistor radio. It was launched in 2004, and it's where podcasting took its name.
This is Andy True, your science correspondent. Welcome, audio adventurers, to the podcast revolution, a digital treasure trove of the internet seas since 1999. A podcast is a digital audio file that's available for streaming or downloading on the internet. These are transmitted through RSS feeds, really simple syndication. While the technology existed in 1999, it was in 2001 that Dave Wiener introduced Enclosure to RSS feeds, allowing the inclusion of audio, video, and PDFs, or EPUBs. He demonstrated this on his blog Scripting News by embedding a Grateful Dead song. Nowadays, many radio stations broadcast live and then upload these shows to an RSS feed as a podcast, getting the best of both worlds. Back to regular programming.
Serial is a podcast produced by influential American media nonprofit NPR. It made its debut in 2014. Serial is widely acknowledged as the real game changer for podcasting, showcasing the on-demand, episodic, moorishness of the form and helping to popularise one of the dominant narrative genres of our day, true crime. Just 4 months after launching, episodes of Serial had been downloaded 68 million times, and that rose to 80 million 1 year later. The stunning viral success of Serial announced podcasting as a new cultural phenomenon, and it wouldn't be long before everyone, from amateurs with a mic at home to multinational conglomerates, would be releasing new material and in an increasing variety of genres and forms, including drama, harking back to the golden days of radio plays. Some people confidently predicted podcasts would be the death of radio. Of course, they said the same thing when television came along, and they were wrong this time too.
Podcasting has obviously had a huge impact on established radio, and in one sense, I see podcasting and radio as absolute siblings, very connected in many ways.
This is Siobhan McHugh, a narrative podcast producer, award-winning author, oral historian, and academic.
In terms of the way that radio has responded to podcasting, I mean, if you look at it historically, at the beginning, it was just a big boost for established radio because they could amplify their listenership by time-shifting their original content.
Many early podcasts were more or less like taping things off the radio, recordings of live broadcasts you might have missed that you could download and catch up on later at your own convenience. But soon, new players were using podcasts to compete with radio.
And I think what took a lot of these broadcasters by surprise was the upstart nature of new entrants into podcasting. People who had not had the imprimatur of established radio, people who just shoved the door open themselves and started doing whatever they wanted to in the podcasting space.
There's a lot of overlap between podcasts and radio, but also some big differences. Here is NFSA curator Joanna McMahon, who we met in episode 3.
I think about what radio meant to me as a child or a teen, like where I was in the early 2000s. That was a very different audio experience of all listening to the same thing. And I think that's really changed really quickly.
There is an actual podcasty quality that is different from radio, that has its own distinguishing characteristics. And radio has since been, I think, in one sense, trying to catch up with that. They have got kind of an enhanced intimacy factor because of the mode of consumption, for starters. So most people listen to podcasts one-to-one, often listening in a private space in their ears through headphones. Whereas radio was more of a collective in the home activity or in the car, a kind of almost a communal space. Podcasting also is a curated space. So there isn't that flick on the switch and find out what's on. There's a very much opt-in choice. What do I want to listen to? Who do I want to have a relationship with? This is the crucial factor. The host in podcasting is absolutely front and center in the success of podcasting and the relationship they have with listeners.
Scroll through your favorite podcast app and you'll find plenty of well-known hosts. For some, podcasts are part of their radio gig, like Richard Feidler's Conversations on ABC Radio. Others, like Hamish and Andy, have left broadcast behind and now just do podcasts. And some use podcasts as a break from their serious day jobs.
Oh, hello, this is Annabelle Crabb.
And this is Lee Sales. Welcome to our first podcast.
Yes, I'm trying to think of something more illuminating to say than that. That just about sums it up.
In the 10 years since that first episode launched, Lee Sales and Annabelle Crabb's Chat 10 Looks 3 have shown just how big an Aussie podcast can become. It has spawned best-selling books and sold-out live shows. But those two were already household names when they started. Some of Australia's most popular podcasts are hosted by people who not that long ago would never have got a gig on the airwaves. Because that's the beauty of podcasts. Anyone with a recording device can make one. You don't need to be a media professional. As long as you know how to talk to your audience, there may be a spot for you on a platform like Listener. Many of these podcasts are what is known as chatcasts or chumcasts. The idea is that you're eavesdropping on a chat between friends, which is not unlike one of radio's favourite formats, those banter-heavy morning and afternoon drive time shows. Take Stop Everything with Beverly Wang, for example.
It's time to stop, drop, and overthink about all the ways pop culture affects and reflects us. And Benjamin Law, I think our mission statement is particularly apt this week because I would like you to take a minute to think about how things like saying, I'm so pimp, and fashiz, affects me and reflects on you.
Then there's long-form storytelling. This is Benjamin Law, who we heard from in episode 5. He also happens to be the previous co-host of Stop Everything with Beverly Wang.
The fact that we have like serial narratives, the fact that we have investigations that take time and you can follow the investigations live as they actually happen. The fact that I think radio has found this really interesting marriage between entertainment and education and edification. I think for a long time, radio needed to be very, very serious or it was completely frivolous. And I think radio, a lot of the stuff that I listen to, gets you in with a really good narrative hook that's fun in order to bring in the Trojan horse of something that's much more serious. The stuff that TV and writing has done for a really long time, we're seeing that in radio now. And I think radio is taken seriously as a narrative form. So as someone who comes from like a writing and now screenwriting background, what I'm excited about radio is like really pushing storytelling in general. It's not just news and music, as important as those two things are. It's about Australian stories. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Australian Stories are platform next.
And while listening to podcasts is usually a solitary activity, charismatic hosts can inspire the audience to create their own community. Here's Joe Palazuelos-Krukowski, who we met in episode 2.
I think when you have a cultural event like Serial, it goes back to that. It comes back to like, oh, let's all listen to this together. Let's all experience this together as a community. Let's let it impact us. And we have to process it with other people. We don't just want to keep it to ourselves. So I think when we love something, we listen to it together. And I think that that really shows in the way we handle this media.
Siobhan McHugh agrees.
At the same time, listeners are creating these peer-to-peer relationships via social media and building a sense of community around a podcast figure or a podcast show, which is kind of taking it out of the hands of the production and the institution that was behind, say, a radio program. They don't have any gatekeepers in podcasting, and that is one of the defining strengths of the medium and one of the exciting things about podcasting, which unfortunately, like all innovations, can also be abused. And so on the one hand, the great openness of podcasting and its accessibility to almost anyone to have a go at being a podcaster can be leveraged by people with malevolent intent, from my point of view, people who want to use it to perpetrate bigotry or hate speech or whatever.
For Fenella Kernebone, that looseness of podcasts highlights radio's dependability.
There is something to be said, I think, for national broadcasters and for community radio that goes through stringent protocols as part of their licenses in order to help people like myself know that this is trustworthy information. I can listen to it. I can disagree with them sometimes, and I can go and find out who they are. So it's transparent and there is an element of trust.
Podcasts are now one of the most pervasive forms of audio experience to spring from new digital technologies. And Australians are amongst the most enthusiastic podcast listeners in the world, surpassing the Americans in 2021. But it took a while. Unlike our rapid take-up of radio in the 1920s and 30s, Australia was relatively slow to get digital. Let's go back to the late 1990s. It's an exciting time. Sydney is gearing up for the Olympics. There's this new thing called the internet, which is opening a whole new world of possibilities. And a couple of industry veterans have a bright idea. Here's producer, executive, and music industry legend, Chris Gilbey.
I was born in England, and when I came to Australia at that time, I was making my way in the music business, and I just had reached a point where I went, I don't want to be in this game anymore. And I'd become very interested in technology. By the 1997-98, I got together with a few of my friends. One of them was Barry Chapman, who had been at Triple J. Ian Rogerson, who'd been an announcer, DJ on Triple J, and prior to that on Triple M. And we probably were drinking, smoking joints, doing whatever we did back in those days, and saying, what are we going to do? Where does this go? And I know that Ian Rogerson and I really had together this idea for an online radio station.
By 2000, they were ready to launch. They had recruited some of the biggest names in the business. Angela Katerns, Ian Rogerson, Helen Razor, Debbie Spillane, Michael Tun. What could go wrong? Infrastructure. That's what went wrong.
There was virtually no broadband. There was a promise of broadband from Telstra and others. Back then, we were optimistic and thought, oh, it's just around the corner. And I knew people at Telstra who were engineers and business development people who kept saying to me, it's coming, Chris, it's going to be great. So we started putting together this idea in anticipation of being able to stream music. Of course, when I look back on it, it was pretty bloody, what can I say, it was very basic. Not necessarily how you'd invent the future, but that's what we were doing.
Trying to deliver a seamless audio experience via dial-up modem, big problem. But not the only problem. Change is hard, and especially when the bright new ideas are local and not imported from an overseas head office.
The response from the music business was pretty much what I expected. They were paranoid. They were like hedgehogs, put their heads into the ground, put up their quills to try and protect themselves from the future. Record business consistently tries to protect itself from the future and consistently fails. And then we had to do a deal with the record companies and publishing companies in order to get licenses. In terms of community access, I think the telcos were very keen to see us succeed because they wanted there to be a pool for broadband. But at the same time, they didn't provide us with any of the infrastructure to enable that to happen. We were naive. Pretty much every entrepreneur out there is naive to start with.
Big Fat Radio weren't the only ones trying something new. Around the same time, another short-lived startup, K-Grind, promised video channels dedicated to everything from music to surfing to extreme sports. Big Fat Radio and K-Grind are great examples of Australian innovation way ahead of their time. Unfortunately for them, just too far ahead of their time. Nowadays, we largely have our broadband issues sorted, and almost all media we consume is on digital platforms. Streaming is so dominant in the music industry that the top 40 sales charts now count streams as well as sales. And it's not all about the major music platforms like Spotify or Apple Music. These days, many people are discovering new tunes on video sharing platforms like TikTok or YouTube. While still important, radio has lost its crown when it comes to making hits. In the UK in 2023, BBC One ignored Kylie Minogue's single, Padam Padam. You look like fun to me. You look a little like somebody I know. Even after it had topped the charts there. A million TikTok memes broke the song and put Kylie back on top. Targeted by outraged fans, BBC eventually relented and added the song to its playlist, Tail Between Legs. Nevertheless, radio has proved its resilience. Australians are amongst the world's top consumers of podcasts, but a large percentage of the population still tunes into the radio. And it's not just the oldies. In fact, more Australians aged between 12 and 34 listen to the radio each week than use TikTok. NFSA's curators are busy capturing the changes in the medium for future generations. Here's Joanna McMahon again.
Interestingly, when we're thinking about collecting radio, one of the first things we looked at as a way to preserve radio was using the podcast versions, because then they're more easily available, like Hamish and Andy, for example. And then the limitation of that is that radio is a live broadcast medium, and that is part of it, which is obviously changed a lot over the last few decades, but is essential to its nature as well. And so needing to figure out how to capture and preserve something that is live broadcast. Yeah, podcasts don't cut it when it comes to preserving it, I don't think. I do think podcasts are incredibly important and need to be preserved in their own right. But I think when we're thinking about preservation of radio, you need to be able to capture that live broadcast medium.
And at the archive, we also need to be thinking about what happens next. Perhaps Joe Palazuelos-Krukowski has heard the future and felt it.
I do think we're going to find new and exciting ways to play with sound and to create that sense of connection. I went to a fantastic show. They had a haptic feedback suits that you could put on so you could feel the music in your body. So it was synced up to what was happening on stage. And perhaps moving forward, radio and oral media will become that. There'll be a linking to that sensory experience. And how like scary would it be to listen to a horror radio at play in a haptic suit? But yeah, I just think there are so many avenues for it to expand. And I just really hope that we go back and use these old traditions, that they don't just disappear, but we build on them and we make them our own, because they are so rich. They do speak to such important cultural moments.
This is a great point. Throughout its 100 years in Australia, radio has both led change and adapted to it, in a constant interplay of culture and technology. But the basic human urge to listen, just to listen, to a story or to music, has remained a constant. Whether it's through a big brown piece of furniture in a 1930s suburban lounge room, one show at a time, or on your mobile phone, whenever you like and wherever you go. And radio has survived. It's there to connect you for the big moments. And it's a quiet voice in your ear during your downtime. We asked our Brains Trust if radio can keep competing in a world addicted to images. Chris Gilby reckons radio's ability to transport us guarantees its survival.
Sound still remains, in my view, a far more important and immersive aspect of our environment than vision. It's a medium that enables you to move out of your own mind and into a bigger space without distracting you. That's really out there. I mean, it really is. The theatre of the mind is enabled by your ears.
Siobhan McHugh agrees.
Sound is the first sense we acquire in the womb, and apparently the last sense to leave us when we die. We're often told we can hear the voice even when we can't respond. And even film people acknowledge the power of audio, the overriding power of audio. They can have all the beautiful visuals they want, but if the audio soundtrack is off, it won't work. It won't connect with people. Audio can still quieten a room and reach people in a place that no other medium can. And that is its superpower and its secret power. And that will always endure because it's a primal connection.
For Wendy Harmer, it's immediacy that's radio's greatest strength.
And I'll tell you what, when something happens, when there's an earthquake or when there's a fire or when there is a disaster of some kind or when there is a celebration, everyone is going to switch on the radio because they know that's where they'll find the most immediate, up-to-date news. That's where they'll find eyewitnesses who are on the spot. That's where they'll find reporters who are out and about in a heartbeat. And so, you know, that's where we will all gather. And I think that will happen for many years to come.
Benjamin Law looks forward to radio becoming even more inclusive.
I think it's going to be more diverse, and I think diversity is a buzzword, but by diversity, I mean like we're going to hear from so many more people because radio has become incredibly democratic very recently when you think about it. In the past decade alone, the podcasting revolution means that there are so many voices on air that we just wouldn't have caught otherwise. People from disability backgrounds, people from different parts of Australia. I mean, we're a unique multicultural country to an extent, but the fact that we have so many hundreds of languages spoken here and that there is an outlet that at some part of the day will broadcast in your mother tongue, like that's extraordinarily important.
It isn't just what we listen to that makes radio important. It's the way it makes us feel, according to Joe Palazuelos-Krakowski.
It's what radio scholars call a care medium. It's a medium that kind of makes us feel taken care of. Weirdly, even when you're listening to horror radio, you feel like you're being taken care of because the narrator is always like, sit down, get comfortable, turn out your lights. The human voice is like an index of presence.
We'll give the last word to Bonnie Lee Dodds and Tom Hogan, the diehard romantics we met in episode 4.
I think radio is shifting, but it's always kind of shifted with what's happening in the wider landscape.
I think even if it's niche and it survives, then it's still powerful. I think the people who love radio, and therefore it's not going to like disappear. I say that about so many art forms in general. It's just like people thought the radio play was dead, and then it's like podcasts are just everywhere. I mean, I also just love it. I think that's the thing. I think it does allow communication.
I think we've got another centenary ahead of us.
Who listens to the radio? We do. According to Edison Research's Infinite Dial study, Australians are world leaders when it comes to time spent listening to radio. 79% of us listen every week. That's higher than in the US, Canada, and New Zealand. Why are we such a nation of audiophiles? Is it the good old tyranny of distance, the need to bridge the city-country divide? Sure, that may be a factor. Although now we have cellular, satellite, and internet, we're pretty plugged into the rest of the world. 3 in 4 Australians say that radio is more important to them in summer, in backyards, on beaches, and on the road, lazily keeping an ear on the cricket, the hottest 100, and maybe a nearby bushfire threat. But here's the thing. 3/4 of Australians reckon that radio and audio help build a sense of community. And it's interesting to note that Australian-made podcasts dominate the charts. The Australian Podcast Ranker, put together by industry peak body CRA, shows that 9 of our top 10 podcasts are Australian. And that's pretty striking when you compare it with the most popular shows at the movies, on TV and on Netflix. Audio is a real-time medium. It's the way we listen to what's happening around us while it's happening. It's a local medium, letting us tune in to neighbourhood traffic reports and supermarket specials, lovelorn neighbours and angry voters. It's the sound of us speaking amongst ourselves. And maybe that's why we want that voice in our ear to speak in a familiar accent. And so we keep on listening to the radio. This has been Who Listens to the Radio, brought to you by the National Film and Sound Archive of Australia. Thank you to our guests, Siobhan McHugh, Fenella Kernerbone, Joe Palazuelos-Krakowski, Chris Gilby, Benjamin Law, Wendy Harmer, Bonnie Lee Dodds, Tom Hogan, and NFSA curators Crispian Windsor and Joanna McMahon. And not to forget our science communicator, Andy True. You can visit the Radio 100 digital exhibition at nfsa.gov.au. If you've enjoyed Who Listens to the Radio, don't forget to rate or review wherever you get your podcasts.